Good morning to you. It is a Wednesday. It's your hump day if you're just waking up. It's our hump show, and it's been a doozy already. Let me just tell you, we have mixed it up, and I've been doing my best to make sure that producer Jay does not spontaneously combust, but I don't know. We have another hour, and it's still touch and go. We are live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Lest you think it's over his beloved Brooklyn Nets. It's not, actually. It's because it's been another one of those shows and one of those pre-show stretches where behind the scenes, pretty much everything is blowing up and nothing works. And I was about to try the vending machine method where it steals your candy or your chips or your drink, and so you kick it. We're about to that place here at CBS Sports Radio where we're just going to start kicking things. I will tell you, I'm not above getting really angry and throwing things across the studio. But usually it's a pen or it's a mic cover or it's the remote. I mean, I do that at home too every now and then. One time in my life, I've thrown a remote at a person. He totally deserved it.
You gotta hear this story at some point.
No, you don't. Anyway, it's one I'm never telling on the radio. He totally deserved it, though. Just trust me. Anyway.
I don't know.
Producer, it doesn't matter if you know or not. Just take my word for it. Producer Jay is hanging in there, and the show has been great. Show has been great, Jay. Everything's good. All right, cool. So you can find us on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page, our YouTube channel too, if you're looking for some type of evidence that Jay is actually in a good mood most of the time.
Most of the time. Like 98% of the time.
Yeah, usually it's me that's a ball of stress and is having to work it out even as I'm on the air, though I pride myself in the fact that you never know this. So I've been teasing producer Jay and making him laugh, and whether he wants to or not, making him smile. But he's still in a blah kind of a place. Just admit it. You're in a blah.
Oh yeah, I'll
place.
Admit that. And I think it was the mouse being unplugged that really just put
that
me
was
over
it?
The edge.
That was the mouse that broke the camel's back.
On top of like 400 other things that are like always a problem here, but yeah, that was the one.
Yes, and yet the show is what matters. And has the show been negatively affected in ways that our listeners would recognize?
I don't think even for a second.
Nope, probably not. If not for the fact that I've been trying to smooth things over while we're on the air, then I don't even think anybody would know. You and I would know. You're obviously my concern. Well, show is a greater concern. Sorry, Jay.
No, that's fair.
I gave you chocolate. You didn't even eat it.
Now that I can take a little bit of a breather here in this final hour. I'm going to have the chocolate.
Do you want to breathe on the air? That you didn't even intake. You just did an
exhale.
That was.
There
was
no good, honestly.
Inhale there.
Worse.
Well, it's because you didn't inhale. You need some good yoga
breathing.
Some box breathing. Where is Aaron Rodgers when he needs to remind you that you have to love yourself? I just freaking nailed that.
Box breathing.
He wants you to love yourself. Forgive yourself.
I got engaged.
Are not the drops I'm looking for. Maybe we can get the Ken Dorsey audio that I told you about earlier, which is so funny. And then we can use that to laugh and to giggle. In the meantime, we could just laugh at Kevin Durant that, oh yes, all of a sudden everything is just peachy. Ooh, I ate a peach earlier. It was delicious. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So find us on social, find us on our YouTube channel. There is evidence that when we control the process from start to finish, it goes swimmingly. It was not that long ago that it wasn't producer Jay who was ticked off and angry about things not going his way and work being more difficult. No, it was Aaron Boone. And Aaron Boone used the method that I just recommended. He hit something. He smacked it.
It's right in front of us.
He pounded the table. And look what happened. The Yankees responded to his outburst.
Pitch hit in the air to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Oh, what a judgian blast. It went over the grandstand and way up in the bleachers. all rise. Here comes the judge. Boy, I mean, he hit one out of sight in left field, and the Yankees take a 1-0 lead. 2-1. Line is a base hit, left center field. Trevino rounds third. He scores on his way to third, and there is Benny. And for Judge, a base hit and an RBI. And the Yankees take a 4-2 lead. Here's the 0-2 to Lindor. The pitch swung on, a fly ball to center. Floreal is there. He makes the catch. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Different guys stepping up, whether it be in the bullpen or the rotation. So we've got some clutch hits and, you know, clutch at bats from guys, you know. So, you know, that was a really good baseball game out there in a great environment. And, you know, we're able to hang on tonight. A good way to finish, you know, what's been a tough stretch for us to finish off the homestand with three wins against three great opponents and pitchers. You know, good way to head into the off day. It's been a tough stretch. We're grinding. I think these wins can go a long way and kind of helping you build a little bit of confidence and get that swagger back a little bit, hopefully.
Swagger. Get your swagger back. Well, there's a few reasons why the swagger was there on Tuesday. First of all, Aaron Judge hit another home run, and he goes 2-for-4 with that dinger plus a couple of RBI. The big night for him generally, not always, but generally does lead to a Yankees victory. And in this case, a turnaround since Saturday.
Swing and strikes. I think that's the most important thing. That's what it really comes down to. You know, trying to get a good pitch, a hit, and, you know, take your A swing. You know, sometimes you won't get that pitch, but, you know, you can pass the baton, but just trying to get, you know, a good pitch over the plate. Past couple series, we haven't been doing the little things, you know, run the bases right, you know, playing a little small ball, coming up with situational hitting, you know, playing good defense. And, you know, I think just the past three games, we've really locked in on just, you know, the small things in the game that make up the difference.
Aaron Judge on the YES Network, though. I watched the game on Amazon Prime, in case anyone is keeping score at home. It's after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Frankie Montas, also a big reason why the Yankees were able to extend the win streak, take both games against the Mets in the Bronx. And his ERA had been 9 since he joined the Yankees. But last night goes 5 2/3, only allows a couple runs to the Mets on 6 hits with 6 strikeouts. And it's obvious. This is not rocket science, nor something that we need an analyst to tell you, though I did talk about it with Yankees insider Sweeney Murdy. Montas is critical to their success moving forward.
I feel like everybody's on the same page, just trying to go out there and win games, and no matter what happens, just trying to do your best, you know, and give 100%. And when you get, like, good results, you know, when you just go out there and compete, I mean, the team's going to feel really good about that.
As for the New York Mets, well, they get a taste of what it was like to be the Yankees. I guess it was a few weeks ago, when the Mets took both games that were on their home field. Now the Yankees respond. They only score 4 runs in the 2 games, and they wrap up this, was it 10-game road trip with these 2 in the Bronx, and now have the night off before they move into the Colorado Rockies series.
It's been a tough road trip, so we're going to take this experience, all these experiences against these high quality teams. We're going to learn lessons from them, and we're going to apply it on Thursday.
So Pete Alonso has Jacob DeGrom on the mound come Thursday to start that series, and the Mets still are the better team when it comes to New York and the bragging rights. And they still do have the lead in the NL East, though it is getting thinner. Taijuan Walker replaced Jacob DeGrom in the Mets rotation last night. He allows the 2 runs on 4 hits. Last 5 innings, so longer than his previous outings, but still not quite enough to protect the bullpen. And there were some suspect moments in the field as well. It always blows me away. Maybe it's just me, and I get it. Baseball's not an easy game. Sports are not easy. These are humans. But when you see a play where 3 fielders are converging, they're close enough that they could do elbow bumps, which I hate. They're close enough where they could link arms, and yet somehow the ball drops in between them. It is amazing to me. I am the person. I did play softball for years and years and years. I'm the person who sticks my glove out there. If it hits someone in the face, oh well. I mean, somebody catch the ball. Pete Alonso watched it drop. It was close enough that it could have hit his nose, and it just dropped right on the field. Maybe they were hoping it would go foul, but it didn't. It was fair, and it led to some other runs. So the Mets didn't play the field well either, but Aaron Judge, Andrew Benintendi, others able to get good wood on the ball, and that's three in a row now for the New York Yankees. If you missed my conversation with Sweeney Murdy, he joined us earlier in the show. He's Yankees insider for the flagship, our New York affiliate, WFAN. We talked to him about Aaron Boone and his display of emotion, what's changed for the Yankees, and what they have to do to avoid yet another swoon. Remember, before these three wins in a row, they'd won 10 of their last 30. Let's talk to Mark, who's in California. Welcome to After Hours.
What's up, Amy? So I was on Sal earlier, Sal Licata on WFAN, and he was bashing Frankie Montes, bashing him like PEDs, 80 games. You know, he sucks. And I'm like, listen, Walker did pitch pretty well today. You know, six innings, five innings, two runs. Montes' best start as a Yankee. First couple innings, he was a little rocky, and I was like, oh, here we go. But then, you know, struck out. That Pete Alonso breaking the bat was like, I was laughing. Sitting right next to a Mets fan, he's talking all this crap all year. We're better than you, blah, blah, blah. That bat was just like, you know, I hope that bat continues
just
on.
For people who don't know, since this is a national show and not a New York show, when Pete Alonso struck out, he struck out. It was earlier in the game and literally turned from the plate and snapped the bat in half over his knee.
Also,
it was replayed in slow-mo. It was amazing.
He was up 3-0. He was up 3-0 on Alonso. Alonso swung at a pitch in the dirt. Then he swung on a changeup, and then it was a fastball right down the middle, struck him out looking, and he just broke his bat. He was just going ballistic, you know, as he should. I mean, you're up 3-0, and he came back to strike him out.
Whatever. It happens to every hitter. It happens to Aaron Judge, too.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember a couple games there. Aaron Judge went 9 games, and you see what Judge said. Judge said, did I go 9 games? I don't even remember. Like, it was just such a really funny thing. I'm very excited about this team now. I mean, obviously you play these 7 games against West Coast teams with the Angels and Oakland, and they should easily win maybe 5. I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised. 5-2 would be great. But wouldn't it be something if the Mets lose the division to Atlanta and then go and let's just say San Diego. I don't want to play San Diego. No team wants to play San Diego with that offense to wake up at any given moment. They play San Diego, and let's just say the Mets are eliminated from the playoffs. They do not.
Dude, your speculation. I don't. Okay, why? Why would that
be
something?
Why? Would this be probably the biggest collapse you think?
Okay, I can't talk collapses in August. I can't talk collapses in August, especially coming from a Yankees fan who just saw his team win 10 of its last 30. I mean, come on, man. We're not even to September yet. I can't be talking playoff collapses.
Well, I was saying that if they were to collapse the Yankees, it'd be the biggest collapse probably, you know, in sports history, just considering how great they've been. But, you know, you're a Yankees fan, right?
I'm not a Yankees fan. What?
You're not?
Are you kidding me? I'm not from New York. I would not be here if it were not for work. No, I'm not a New York fan of anything.
I think you were saying something last time we spoke about Tampa Bay, and I think somebody from your family was a Tampa Bay fan. You wanted the Yankees to beat Tampa Bay.
No, dude, you're making stuff up. That's not me. I don't actually have any fans in my, most of my family's not even sports fans, and I don't know anyone who's a Rays fan personally. So
wild. Well, I must have been dreaming, Amy, but
yes, I'm pretty sure that's the case. Or just making crap up for the fun of it.
Oh my gosh. But no, I mean, as a Yankees fan, I'm extremely ecstatic with this because I don't know what would have happened if they had lost both games. And then,
they probably would have set Yankee Stadium on fire. Who cares? It's regular season. Great. It was nice. And the Yankees needed them more than the Mets did, but it's not like the season is over, nor has either team collapsed. Okay, Mark. Well, that was humorous. Thank you so much for your phone call from California. Whew. It's 2:15 in the morning in California. That is the reason why he thinks I'm a Yankees fan. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time someone's made that mistake, but yikes. The Mets, they have not collapsed. We're not talking collapse here, but we've seen this movie before. The Braves are creeping ever closer. And Max Fried, a big reason why they pick up a game on New York last night, he threw 8 innings of one-run ball, allows just 3 hits, strikes out 7, and so the Pirates are nothing to Max Fried.
It was a lot of fun. I think looking back on it, probably my fastball command wasn't as good as I would have liked. But, you know, I thought being able to have conversations with Travis throughout the day, and Cranny and Sal, being able to make a little bit of a pivot and kind of work with what we had today. And, a lot of credit goes to him. He's calling a great game back there and obviously, ignited us with that homer.
So Max Fried picks up, I think it was win number 12. I'm going to have to look at it again just to be sure. But in addition to that, he gets not only the support of, 12-4, boom. He gets the support of Travis d'Arnaud behind the plate as well as at the plate because d'Arnaud hits home run number 13. So the Braves are within 2 games of the NL East lead. The Mets still have it, but we've seen this before. Again, we've seen the Braves surge multiple times and come close. Is this the stretch in which they overtake the Mets? Or I think we're going to see a battle all the way through the rest of September. So 5 weeks to go now in the regular season. And I only know this because I heard Boomer Esiason talking about it. But apparently the Mets have a strength of schedule that becomes a lot weaker in the final month of the season. So these teams in the NL East all play the same opponents, right? Roughly they play the same schedules. But for whatever reason, the Mets' weaker portion or the weaker opponents for the Mets are backloaded. And so their September features opponents that either don't have winning records or aren't headed to the playoffs, that kind of thing. So we'll see. Boomer is all, first of all, he's all about the schedule. He loves to look at schedules. So I'm going to take his word for it. All right. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. We've got other storylines in baseball. I wish we had another home run from Albert Pujols, but not on this Wednesday. Instead, we had 2 pitchers working on win number 16. 2 different leagues, 2 names that you should know by now. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Astros lead 2-0. 0-2 to Urshela. That's a ground ball left side to his left. Bregman, third baseman, has it. Throws on the move in time. And it's a 1-2-3 inning for Justin Verlander. Verlander has faced 16 and has retired 15.
Bregman's 2-for-3. Here's the pitch. And he clubs this one. Left field high. Far and deep. A 2-run shot for Alex Bregman, and it's 4-0, just like that.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Robert Ford and Steve Sparks says the Astros provide plenty of fireworks behind their ace, Justin Verlander, who had a no-hitter through 6 innings but did not finish the game. He does pick up win number 16, which momentarily was tops in the majors all by himself as the Astros double up their former teammate, Carlos Correa. He got a standing ovation not just from the fans in Houston last night but also from his teammates who were standing on top of the top step of the dugout. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Dusty Baker, why pull Verlander when he's throwing a no-hitter?
Every night we have kind of predetermined pitch count depending on the load that a guy has. And, if we're going to 5-6-man rotation or whatever, but tonight his pitch count was 90 and he had 91. We ask him. And, he thought that was enough. And, it's tough to take a guy out with a no-hitter, but he'd had to go 130 pitches to get that, So, you got to weigh between, a no-hitter and having him for the rest of the year.
Now, according to Verlander, it wasn't one of those nights where he was going to be able to even think about a no-hitter because it's not 15, 20 years ago. He's not going to throw 130 pitches, and he would rather save a game in which he goes deep for the postseason, one where it really matters. Though he does pick up win number 16, he said he doesn't like the idea of an innings limit, but he understands why, especially when he's in his first season back from Tommy John. But it's pretty sweet to watch. 10 strikeouts through the 6 innings, only one base runner, and he now has a 1.87 ERA.
Yeah, I thought it was probably some of the best stuff I've had all year. Not too many good swings. Pretty much the entire night. So that's what you like to see as a pitcher.
He is now 16-3. The Dodgers, you can't really call him the ace, although I guess he's the de facto ace this season. I mean, it was Clayton Kershaw who started the All-Star game. Maybe that was more about his legacy with the Dodgers because the game was at Dodger Stadium, though he had pitched pretty well. But it's Tony Gonsolin who spearheaded the Dodgers rotation all season. Walker Buehler just had another surgery, another Tommy John, so he's out for at least another year, if not longer. We've seen other guys in and out of that rotation, but it's been Tony Gonsolin who's been steady Eddie for them all season, now 16-1, and lowers his National League leading ERA to 2.10. And actually kind of cool, last night he was pitching for the Dodgers and his college teammate Corbin Burnes, they both pitched for St. Mary's, he was pitching for the Brewers.
Felt like Friday or Saturday fall game at school, but it was really cool to go out there and have him toe the mound on the other side of the ball. It's the first time we've thrown against each other in our professional career, so it was pretty cool to do that. I thought about doing something funny, but I decided against it.
I wonder what that would have been. Gonsolin gives up a run on 3 hits. He has 3 strikeouts, walks a couple. He said it was a weird day for him. He didn't feel like he had his best stuff, but he prides the defense behind him and also the fact that Trace Thompson had 4 RBI. I think Freddie Freeman had 4 RBI. The Dodgers beat up on Corbin Burnes. They shoved him down to the playground and took his lunch money. And so this was an easy win for the Dodgers rebounding. They don't often have games in which they come up with 0 offense, which is what happened for them on Monday. But they responded in a pretty loud and obnoxious way, which is what the Dodgers want to do. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for all your questions for Ask Amy Anything, part of The Hump Show. We answered a bunch of them live on the air last hour. But for those of you who didn't hear your questions answered, I do go back and respond on both Twitter and Facebook over the course of Wednesday. So make sure you check that out. We have some QB news coming up following the update. But even before we leave baseball, just one more big story that was front and center again on Tuesday. Fernando Tatis speaking to reporters after he talked to his own Padres teammates. So he meets with them. He admits that it was tough. There was some tough love there. And then with the president of baseball ops, AJ Preller, standing next to him, as he's surrounded by dozens of members of the media, Tatis admits to failing. He apologizes to all the people he failed. He says, "I have seen how my dreams have turned into my worst nightmares. And now I have to figure out how to make this up to my teammates."
"It's going to be a very long process to gain everybody's trust again, to gain that love back that I have stabbed straight to the heart, to every fan, to every baseball fan. I'm learning. I'm maturing. But it's with actions. It's with action that I'm going to beginning doing. And the action is going to speak for myself in the future. So there's going to be a whole new story out there. And there's going to be changes out there. And it starts today."
"You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. And, we all make mistakes. And,
you know, it just sucks that he was, you know, in our situation, in his situation, you know, it's all over the world, but we're all human beings. We all make mistakes, and you know, we all forgive, and we all move forward and try to learn from those mistakes. And you know, ultimately, that's all we can do.
Manny Machado responding to Tatis, and there were others from the Padres who spoke out once Tatis made his comments. You had his teammates who, along with AJ Preller, who seemed supportive of him. And for Tatis to admit to his mistakes, not only calling this medication in the DR, he did say that it was for a skin infection, but that he didn't check. He didn't check to see what the ingredients were. He didn't compare them to the substances on baseball's banned list. But he also said he regretted getting on that motorcycle in December. Remember, he broke his wrist. He kept it from the team and then didn't even get his surgery until March. He swears this was not about speeding up the healing process or building muscle, that he just literally made a stupid mistake by not checking what was in this medication that he could only get in the DR. It wasn't prescribed by the Padres doctors. And in fact, it's not available in the U.S. So he owns up to that. Now he's going to have shoulder surgery. He actually decided to skip it at the end of last season, though it did hamper him and limited him. You had guys like Joe Musgrove say people make mistakes. It's something that we're definitely not going to hold over his head for the rest of his career. Different tune than what we heard from the Padres when they were stunned by this suspension. And Tatis is very early in the 80-game ban. At this point, he can say whatever he wants, right? But his teammates need to know that he's a changed man moving forward. He's not going to take unnecessary risks. He's not going to keep things from the team. He's not going to be making decisions on his own with his people around him and not involving the Padres brass or his teammates. He called it tough love in this meeting. And he admits that when he found out about his suspension, even before it became public, he freaked out, but says, quote, "There's no other one to blame than myself. I haven't made the right decisions these past few weeks, month, even starting in the beginning of the year. I have made a mistake and I regret every single step I've taken in these days. I'm going to remember how this feels and I'm going to make myself not ever be in this position again." And I'm going to stick to what I said last week. We can debate whether or not his apology is sincere. Ultimately, it doesn't matter because he's got a $340 million guaranteed contract and a no-trade clause. So yes, life would be a hell of a lot easier for him if he can prove to his teammates that he's trustworthy, if he can be worthy of that contract. But other than the money he loses with the suspension, the Padres have to welcome him back with open arms, like it or not. That's the beauty of a 14-year, $340 million deal. We're coming up, still no deal for Jimmy Garoppolo. And is Kyle Shanahan changing his tune about what the future holds for his former starting quarterback? Plus, Christian McCaffrey weighs in on why Baker Mayfield is a great leader and a good quarterback.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Mahomes fires for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Murray back to throw. And it is. Is it caught? Is it caught? Oh my goodness, it's caught! DeAndre Hopkins caught it!
He's got a man wide open. John Brown, he makes the catch. Touchdown, Buffalo! John Brown from Josh Allen.
Lamar Jackson in the shotgun. Lob to the five. It is caught. Touchdown, Willie Snead.
Play fake by Russ.
throws deep, man wide open, it's Lockett, he's in, touchdown, Seahawks!
Tannehill rolling, throwing, touchdown, Titans!
Burrow back to pass, throws into the end zone,
yeah,
it's intended for Tyler
yeah.
Boyd,
touchdown,
touchdown. Yeah. Bengals!
It's time for QB News on After Hours.
Maybe you've noticed, or maybe you haven't checked lately, Jimmy Garoppolo is still a member of the San Francisco 49ers, and we're getting down to cut day. Will the Niners cut him? That's been the speculation, because if he's on the roster week one, they have to pay that fully, well, they have to pay the salary. It's fully guaranteed then, and we're talking about upwards of $25 million. In fact, it's more than that. Will they keep him on the roster? And exactly what's happening with Jimmy post-shoulder surgery? And you can tell Kyle Shanahan is so thrilled to be answering these questions about his backup QB.
I communicate with Jimmy all the time. He looks the same as he always has. He always throws it really good. So looks the exact same.
Is he in any way a backup scenario if someone gets hurt? Could he be on this team?
I mean, I think any scenario is possible.
He thought he was done answering questions about Jimmy Garoppolo. Remember last year he got so annoyed?
As long as I can keep surviving press conferences.
Yeah, he was tired of questions about his starting QB. He thought he was done with that. And look, Jimmy Garoppolo's still on the roster, and the Jimmy G questions are still coming. All right. Kyle Shanahan's in a great mood, and we haven't even started the season yet. Staying in the NFC West, at least he's got a starting quarterback. Pete Carroll has yet to decide. And you remember, Drew Lock was going to take snaps with the ones during their second preseason game. He ended up with COVID. So Geno Smith had to start. Then Geno got hurt and got knocked out. So Jacob Eason was the guy. Where does that leave us? Well, Pete Carroll's answering questions about his starting QB.
Geno's been the guy in the lead position the whole time, and I protected that thought with throughout, and he's done a really nice job. He's been very consistent. So we'll just see what happens, and you know, there's two more weeks of practice too after this. So there's where the timeline, I had a set thought on the, I mean, what we would do with the timeline, but that got disrupted, and so we're going to use all the time we need.
Would you ever consider playing two quarterbacks at once?
That can happen. Yeah, that can happen. These guys are so even right now that, you know, that we have a lot of respect for both their play. And so, but I'm not thinking that way right now. I'm thinking of getting going and getting started, ready, rolling, and all of that. And Geno's in the mentality, has been in that mentality the whole time. And that was very much by design.
So Pete Carroll says, we'll take all the time we need. Smith is still in the lead. Geno's still in the lead. But he's wide open that Locke could take over that top spot. And then he gets asked whether or not he would ever consider two quarterbacks in that position. And he says, hey, I mean, that could happen.
Get out of here.
I suppose you could look at something like maybe the Saints situation with Drew Brees versus Taysom Hill, but it wasn't like they were platooning. There were specific situations for Taysom. Right now, it's Geno Smith. Has anybody asked him if he misses Russell Wilson? No idea.
Get out of here.
Feel like you might get excommunicated from the Seahawks media if you tried to ask that question. Russell Wilson is, of course, known for his decade in Seattle. Went to a Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl, extended plays, went to Pro Bowls, yada, yada, yada. Lots of wins, lots of yards, lots of touchdowns, and lots of sacks, right? Isn't that what he mostly complained about in his late in his tenure with the Seahawks? Well, his new head coach, Nathaniel Hackett in Denver, is talking about Russell Wilson and his ability to extend plays, but also stay clean.
We don't ever want him to get touched. I think up to this point, the past two games, I think we gave up one sack, and it was that last play of the game versus Buffalo. So the line has done a good job. The quarterbacks have done a good job getting the ball out. And we want that to carry over for Russell. So, I mean, we want to get that ball out. We want to understand the intention. We want to protect him. And then we want him to do what he does when it breaks down. But if it doesn't break down that way, we want the ball out.
Yeah, no need to create chaos when there isn't any. Take what the defense is giving you. Take
Mr. Unlimited.
Does he think that goes with him to Denver? Take that space and time that the offensive line is offering to you. Peace. Initially, when I heard or saw the quote, I guess, from Nathaniel Hackett, when he said we don't ever want him to get touched, I was thinking, The guy wears a red jersey. No one's allowed to touch him. But, of course, he was referring to actual games and preseason as well.
You gotta be unlimited.
Stop it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. What is the issue with everyone taking aim at Patrick Mahomes this offseason and now into training camp? Why would you do that? First, it's Tyreek Hill, and I think Ty is just mad. He was a little bit mad that the Chiefs didn't give him the money that he thought he deserved, but also mad that he's playing with Tua now instead of Patrick Mahomes. Let's be honest. I'm just kidding. I don't know if that's the truth. But he's been overcompensating for Tua Tagovailoa. Well, here is Sammy Watkins now, who's no longer with the Chiefs. Now he's with Green Bay. And, yeah, I mean, Mahomes is good, but...
You said, I think Pat is incredibly good, but A-Rod is on a whole nother level.
He's amazing how he controls the ball, how he put everybody in place. I've been with a lot of quarterbacks, and I've never seen them carry themselves like Aaron Rodgers.
By the way, that comes from Packers Twitter. So, of course, they're not going to put anything else out there except that would praise Aaron Rodgers.
People are coming here to play with me.
I know, as if you needed someone else to say it. I mean, Mahomes is great and all, but that's just, you never need a but in that sentence, ever. I know Mahomes is good and all, but wrong. Survey says, All right, staying in the NFC North, anybody want to buy into, hey, Jared Goff is the perfect quarterback for the Lions moving forward? This comes from the running backs coach, Deuce Staley.
A true leader, man. These guys look up to him. They listen to him. You can tell when you're in a room how they respect him. And as a quarterback, when you on the outside looking in, as a coach first, to see the guys look at a quarterback like that is special. And, you know, you can always tell from your O-line how he's respected. So if you ever get knocked down, you see those guys that are running over there to get him up. And those guys love him. They love fighting for him. They love battling for him. And I'm happy we got him.
I actually love that from Deuce Staley because it's true. Have you ever noticed that real football guys, actually some guys on the O-line, they will lambaste O-lines on the field if they do not pick up their quarterback when he gets knocked down and also fight for him. And they will also use that as an indicator of how good the relationship is between O-line and quarterback. Was it Pittsburgh last year where the O-line wasn't picking up Ben Roethlisberger when he was getting knocked down and there was a big uproar over it until they started doing it? Even a member of the O-line admitted, we haven't been protecting our quarterback the way that we should. So that's a big deal. I like that from Deuce Staley. Jared Goff, second year in the Lions system. I mean, do we have time for Mike McDaniel to wax poetic about Tua Tagovailoa? He can't stop talking about the Dolphins QB.
I keep saying it because it blows my mind.
It's true.
You're talking about a guy that has really, really good accuracy. You could argue top end. I know I would. But he's a right-handed person that throws lefty. and it's what? But he has, it has been phenomenal to watch him grow. I'm so excited for him and his opportunity because he's been through it. People don't typically put themselves in people's shoes when they're, you know, he didn't choose to be picked sixth in the first round. He was picked sixth in the first round, right? Or, you know, people don't choose to be a top 10. You are chosen.
Oh, dear.
But that is a burden with pressure. And
pressure is a privilege.
And to watch him isolate on what's most important, which is his game and how he quarterbacks the team, and to see his personality come out, and then to see him, I mean, you'll see it the second you watch anything on the practice field. Like, he is playing the quarterback position with intent, purpose, a deliberate nature, with conviction.
Everyone keeps saying it. I mean, Tua might be the most praised quarterback of this entire offseason. I know I keep saying it. So does Tyreek Hill. He's the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. And also something about how he didn't choose to be selected in the top 10. Oh, for goodness sakes. Just let Tua's work and his results on the field do the talking. Why do we have to keep propping Tua up? At some point, enough is enough.
No, about you, but that looked like money.
Let Tua speak for himself, for heaven's sakes. All right, one more. Do we not have room? Oh, we have to. Christian McCaffrey talking about Baker Mayfield. Go.
He's been very diligent. He's extremely smart. He works very hard. He's in here 5 a.m. every day.
Right now?
He's a great guy, great teammate. And I think the way that him and Sam, that dynamic has been incredible. Very professional, competitive, but as respectful and professional that you could imagine. So he's been awesome to work with, and I'm extremely excited to continue that.
How about that? Baker Mayfield's already at work because it is nearly 6 o'clock Charlotte time, which means he's in the facility. Boom. Maybe he's listening to us. Hi, Baker. Have a great hump day. Don't get hurt today. Proud of you. So mature. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom.